Congress has to come to agreement on what to cut, what to increase before January 1st. How will this affect you? The New York Times says today that the tax rate increases, the deduction eliminations being discussed to avoid the fiscal cliff, indicate that a household would probably have to earn more than $250,000, perhaps $300,000, before it would be greatly affected. But what does that really mean? If you make $50,000 and you get, let's say, a couple hundred dollars back less, that could hurt. People making much more than that are selling off stock now to avoid higher taxes later. So let's take a close look with Howard Gluckman, resident fellow at the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, editor of the blog Tax Vox. Howard, welcome as always.
Hi, Robin.
And as if on cue, the New York Times today cites your research at the Tax Policy Center. So I'm guessing, let me ask, do you agree with their assessment that it will take an income of maybe upwards of $250,000 before people feel a big impact of tax increases?
It depends on how they design this. In the short term, I think probably the New York Times is right. I think in the short run, it's very likely that the tax increases will be aimed mostly at high-income households. I think that's exactly right. But in the longer run, I think that it is inevitable that middle-income people are going to end up paying higher taxes too, not through higher rates, but through fewer deductions, fewer tax credits, and other less generous tax preferences.
Well, let's start looking at what is there. The Bush-era tax cuts. Now, the president has made it very clear he wants to keep the cuts for the lower taxes for everyone except the top 2% of earners, again, individuals making over $200,000 a year, families over $250,000 a year. So remind us, what's the value of those cuts?
If we go over the fiscal cliff and all of the tax cuts that have been enacted between 2001 and 2010 expire, the average household is going to pay about $3,500 more a year in taxes next year than they do this year. So that's a significant tax increase. Now, that varies a lot depending on how much money you make.
So if it's kept for people under 250, that'll be good for them.
That's right. If they're protected, if those 2001 to 2010 tax cuts are extended for another year, they will not pay any more in tax next year than they are this year.
There's that lump sum.
Right.
And let's remind ourselves, when it comes to the tax increases that are being talked about, the money that is being taxed is the income over the rate of $250,000. So in other words, I'm asking you, if you have a Bush-era tax cut, you keep it for your first $250,000, but then might lose it under the Obama plan for money over $250,000.
That's exactly right. So it's important to keep in mind that somebody who makes $250,000 is paying taxes at various rates. He's paying tax on his first amount of income, first $30,000 income at 10%. He's paying on the next chunk of his income at 15%. And it's only that last chunk of income that's over a couple of hundred thousand dollars that he's paying the maximum rate. If the Bush tax cuts expire at 39.6%.
Well, President Obama also wants the top tax rates to go from 33% and 35% or 36% to 39% in the different brackets. This is back to the Clinton era levels. Republicans want to get more revenue without raising the rates, but by closing loopholes, which let's explain loopholes, deductions, and exclusions as we start to look at them. People want to know what's going to happen with my mortgage deduction. What's being discussed about eliminating mortgage deductions?
So there are actually three different ways that politicians are thinking about addressing all this. The first way is to go after these individual tax preferences like the mortgage deduction, a deduction for charitable giving, the deduction for state and local taxes. They could go after each of those individually. But politicians look at this and they say, you know what, that's probably a loser's game, that each of these interests is going to be able to gin up tremendous political opposition, and getting into a fight about these one at a time is probably going to get us nowhere. So instead, the politicians are looking at other ways to get at this, and what they're thinking about are across-the-board limitations on these tax breaks. There are two basic ways to do it. One of them is the way that President Obama has been proposing for years, which is limit the value of those deductions to 28%. In other words, that means that if you're in, say, the 35% tax bracket, you could only deduct 28 cents on the dollar for your mortgage interest deduction instead of 35 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
That's President Obama's plan. He's proposed this for several years in a row. It's gotten no support in Congress. Suddenly, politicians are looking at this and saying, well, maybe it's not such a bad idea after all. The second way to do it is the way that Governor Romney proposed in the campaign. And what Romney said is, let's simply allow you to take all of your tax deductions, doesn't matter what they're for, put them in a bucket, and we're going to cap the itemized deductions at a dollar amount. And he threw out lots of different numbers, $17,000, $25,000, and at that point he said $50,000. But essentially you would say that I can take all of the itemized deductions I currently have up to, say, $50,000, use it for whatever, whether it's mortgage interest or charitable gifts or whatever it is, and then after that, I couldn't use any of the benefit after $50,000. So that's Romney's way of doing it. But those are two basic ways to do it. They sound like they're the same thing, but they're very different. And the effects on different income groups are quite different. The Obama proposal, because it caps deductions at 28%, doesn't affect anybody who is in a lower tax bracket than 28%.
Right.
So you've got to be a high-income person, somebody making around $200,000, $250,000, before you're affected at all. The Romney plan, because it caps itemized deductions no matter how much your income, actually can hit some lower-income people if they happen to have lots of itemized deductions. In fairness, we should say that the Romney plan is still pretty progressive, because normally the more income you have, the bigger deductions you're going to take. So normally, the high-income people would pay higher taxes, even under the Romney plan, than they would otherwise. But there are some people who, because of their circumstances, may have large numbers of deductions and therefore might actually lose some of that benefit.
Well,
the other thing that's important to remember when you think about this is 70% of taxpayers, of individual taxpayers, don't itemize at all. 70% of people take the standard deduction. So all of this argument about what we're going to do to itemize deductions is completely irrelevant to two-thirds of taxpayers.
Well, we read that only 4 million of the 114 million American households paying taxes will face a possible tax increase.
Well, again, it depends on what you're doing. If you're just hitting people making more than $200,000, $250,000, that's right.
Howard Gluckman, resident fellow at the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, editor of the blog Tax Vox, on what the fiscal cliff compromises might mean for you. When we come back, what about employer health care, charitable deductions, much more in 1 minute, here and now. Welcome back to our conversation about the fiscal cliff and what avoiding it might cost taxpayers. We're talking with Howard Gluckman, resident fellow at the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center. They've just issued a report with a guesstimate of taxes based on President Obama's proposal. The average benefit to a middle-income taxpayer making, let's say, $50,000 to $75,000 of, say, a mortgage interest deduction is $1,227, while the average benefit to a high-income taxpayer for that deduction, and that's somebody making above $200,000, is $6,650. So, Howard, you say the talk now is about capping the amount of deductions. But we want to underscore that. You're saying nobody's thinking about taking the whole mortgage deduction away. That's a lot of money.
That's right. There is really no chance that we're going to eliminate the mortgage interest deduction.
Well, what about workers over, employed workers over workers who are not with employers? The health insurance benefits provided by an employer, 60% of Americans get their health insurance through their employer. You know, it's considered untaxed income by people who don't get it. Will that go away?
That's not a deduction. That's actually called an exclusion.
Right.
So if you're literally talking about capping deductions, that may not be even affected by this. It depends, again, on what version they decide to use. President Obama's proposal does include the tax exclusion for employee-sponsored health insurance. And the way that works is pretty simple. Let's say you and I are doing exactly the same kind of work, and I get paid $50,000 a year, plus I get $10,000 worth of health insurance from my employer. You don't get health insurance, but you get paid $60,000 a year. You pay more in taxes, both in payroll taxes and in income taxes, than I do. So what some people propose is eliminate or reduce the benefit of that tax exclusion for employer-sponsored health insurance and use the money to do something else. You could use the money to create a tax credit that everybody could use to buy health insurance. That was actually something that John McCain proposed.
How would that work again? A tax credit?
Everybody would get a tax credit for the cost of their health insurance. It wouldn't matter if you got your insurance through your employer or if you bought it on your own. That's going to be very important as we go forward in the Affordable Care Act, and people, more and more people, begin to buy their insurance through health exchanges rather than through their employer.
What about the same thinking, employer contributions to pension plans? These are also tax-free, and earnings in pension savings aren't taxed up front. They're taxed when you use them. But just that idea of employer matching contributions to pension plans not being taxed, might that change?
Well, that's something that's certainly people are talking about. They're also talking about the contributions that you make to, say, a 401k. Where you don't pay the tax when you put the money in, you do have to pay the tax when you take it out. To be honest, I don't think they're going to do much about the tax subsidies for savings. One thing they could do, though, is they could take these dozens and dozens of different tax programs to encourage savings and collapse them down to one or two so people might actually understand them.
Charitable contributions, got to get to this. It cost the government $237 billion over 4 years in lost revenue because people are using that to lessen the taxes they have to pay. But on the other hand, that's $237 billion that went into presumably needy causes. And the average deduction was just over $1,200 in 2009.
The deduction for charitable gifts overwhelmingly benefits high-income people. Very rich people make very large gifts. These are very important to high-income people, and they're very important to the recipients of the gifts. And the great fear among charities, whether they are big college endowments or whether they're soup kitchens, is that if that deduction goes away or is somehow limited for high-income people, that the charities themselves are going to suffer a pretty big hit.
Well, the Tax Policy Center also issued a report based on, it looks like, your best guess of what would happen if President Obama's tax proposals are enacted. You say, according to the Times, taxpayers with adjusted gross incomes over $1 million would see an average increase in taxes of about $184,000, much higher on the ultra-wealthy, that's an average. And then those with incomes from $200,000 to $500,000 would see a tax increase averaging around $4,000. So that's presuming $4,000 for the people making $500,000 and what, maybe about $1,000 or less for people making $200,000. Is that about right?
I think that's about right. Again, it's going to depend a lot on how this is actually structured. I suspect that when Congress and President Obama actually sit down and come to an agreement on this, they're going to mix and match. They may actually raise rates a little bit, but not as much as President Obama wants. So there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching here, and it's going to be hard to know until we see an exact proposal what the real consequences are for specific people. But you can say in general that given the way the politics looks, that is very likely that at least in the first phase of this, in the, let's call it the fiscal cliff avoidance phase, that high-income people will be paying noticeably more in taxes next year than they are this year, and that middle-income people will be paying pretty much the same next year that they do this year. One other thing to keep in mind, there's a big question about what's going to happen to the payroll tax, and that was a tax deduction that averaged a couple of $1,000s. That payroll tax is going to go back to its old rate. It's going to be a significant tax increase for just about everybody who works. The effect on most middle-income families is going to be driven a lot by what happens to that payroll tax. Changes in these deductions, these other things, are going to be dwarfed by what happens to the payroll tax. And right now, we don't know how Congress and President Obama are going to sort that one out.
So if it's about $1,000, maybe a little less for people, making $200,000, if you're making $50,000 to $80,000, you've said the middle class probably won't pay that much or even any more next year, but may down the road. But, if you're making $50,000 to $80,000, might you see a couple $100 increase and that's it, or nothing? Are you really saying nothing, potentially?
You might. But again, if we're talking about limits on tax deductions, most people, the overwhelming majority of people making between $50,000 and $80,000 don't even itemize. So for them, they don't even care about this argument.
Yeah. Howard Gluckman, resident fellow at the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, also a contributor to their blog, Tax Box. Howard, it sounds like people should just start planning. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Robin. Good to talk to you.
Well, and we still have questions. As we mentioned at the start, the very wealthy are already doing things like selling off stocks or scheduling dividend payments to avoid tax hikes after the new year. It sounds, from what we just heard, that average taxpayers aren't going to pay enough more in the new year to justify selling stocks, but we want to ask an investment counselor. So we're going to do that next week. Send us your questions at hereandnow.org. Latest news is next. Here and Now.